Hello, everybody. It is Wednesday in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. My name is Adam Bittner, assistant sports editor for multimedia at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, joined for an emergency Pirates podcast for the second week in a row by Jason Mackey. Jason, the stove is hot, not only on some free agents deals, some trades with Marco Gonzalez, like we talked about last week, but the Pirates have a new television deal, and there's an Andy Rodriguez injury to talk about. So in a period of about 24 hours, a bunch of topics we need to talk about bubbled up. So it made sense to just record a podcast about it. How are you?
I'm doing all right. The Pirates pirated last night. I laugh at these moments now, having covered this team for a few years where, you know, you have plans to do something. And then here we are, Rowdy Tellez. Here we are, Andy Rodriguez. And I'm not sure it made anybody feel any better. You know, two of the three were actually positive, I think. But the fan base and everybody who follows this team is kind of in an interesting spot right now, and some frustration and a weird offseason to this point.
Yeah, so we're gonna start big. We're gonna start with this TV deal because I think it has the most wide-reaching implications for the team's future, and then we'll kind of narrow down onto the Andy Rodriguez situation, the catchers, all of that. Before we do, just want to thank our sponsor for every episode of our Pirates podcast, the North Shore Tavern. As always, the North Shore Tavern, if you love baseball, you'll love the North Shore Tavern. The interior is wall-to-wall Pirates. There are appetizers, entrees, cocktails, and, of course, steak and seafood on a sizzling lava stone. Open every day, the North Shore Tavern across from PNC Park is Pittsburgh's home for steak on a stone. Jason, we just had our Post-Gazette Sports holiday party there on Monday. Some good food, some good times. Was nice to get everyone together in one room. It's rare that we actually do that. So shout out to North Shore Tavern for making that a great experience for all of us. Okay, let's get into it with this TV deal. The Pirates, you know, the headline is they're staying basically where they've been for most of my life, most of your life, on the AT&T Sportsnet channel. That's gone by different names, different periods of time, but it's you know, Pittsburgh's regional sports network. Now it's no longer owned by a third party. It is owned directly by both the Pirates and the Penguins. The Pirates become co-owners after the Penguins had already hopped on and bought out the rights earlier in the year. What's your overall top-line reaction to the deal and its details? And then we can kind of dig into some of the nitty-gritty.
Yeah, I've got thoughts on this, as I'm sure you do. But I like it. I'm not surprised by it. This is the route I expected them to go. It bounced back and forth, right? Like, this had different flavors to it, but this one had kind of gotten some staying power for a large reason because of what I think is going to be a bit of a departure from what fans have seen previously, meaning like an hour of pregame, postgame. I think it's going to have a little different feel, and you're starting to see that with Penguins games because it's not a traditional RSN. I think it's kind of like a beefed up RSN. I like the job Nesson does personally. And that relationship, I think, is kind of key to why the Pirates wanted this, to making this work. I think initially, I mean, it's a shorter term deal, as I reported. My speculation would be like 2-3 years. I mean, it's multiple years, so it's no fewer than two. I don't really see why it would go beyond three. I believe that puts them to the next CBA. But in any case, like, there's some interesting elements. I think there's some continuity, which is important to point out, which I did with like the announcers, how games are handled, analysts and that sort of thing. But, you know, I think the nut of it, Adam, is just where are the Pirates going to be able to replicate between $50 and $60 million in this TV deal? And I don't think it's there yet, but I'm curious what that means as far as like national revenue, national advertisers, things that happen, a direct-to-consumer streaming option, that sort of stuff. Like, it might come in different forms, but I think this is run well enough that I am curious to see what Nesson can do to juice more money out of this package.
Yeah, I think I was going to ask this a little bit later, but I might as well hop into this question now. To me, the streaming option, I think, is the most interesting. We're talking about they're not replicating the 50 to 60 million. Correct me if I'm wrong. We're talking directly about cable revenue. We're talking about the RSN itself. We're not talking about a streaming component, but do you look at this deal and say, hey, like, the Pirates have maybe some unique potential to sell a lot of streaming subscriptions here because of that Pittsburgh diaspora, people who have had to previously pay the NHL Center Ice to see the Penguins or pay for the MLB Extra Innings or MLB.TV, where you get access to all the games, but you don't get access just to one team if you only want to pay just to watch the Pirates. I think it's very possible that this will be attractive to out-of-town fans, and I think you could get a lot of people subscribing. Could that help fill that gap of what we're talking about between what they got on the cable side and what they used to have?
Yeah, and I mean, I don't think it's going to be a direct replacement, but do I think it's going to swing in the Pirates' favor? Absolutely. And I think it's an important component of this because again, it's money. It's stuff they want to do. I talked to Travis Williams about this afternoon. I said, like, when can fans reasonably expect this direct-to-consumer streaming option? He said, as soon as possible. Like, we want it now. And that's a big thing for the Pirates. And I think, I mean, shoot, Adam, I was one of those people that lived that life, right? Like, I was a Pittsburgher. I went to live in D.C. for 3.5 years. I bought the Sunday ticket package. There were a whole bunch of other Pittsburghers down there with me. And it's that way across the country. Like, I feel that complaint as much as anything else on this beat. People saying, like, I want a streaming option. I want to be able to stream games. And, I mean, Nesson also does that. They do it well. They do it expensively. And I think like you are capitalizing on what people want. If the Pirates cooperate and put a semi-watchable product on there that people in other cities are going to want to identify with, if it's coupled with the Penguins, which it very well might be, so maybe you don't give people a choice and you sort of reel them in and ride maybe some of the Penguins' success. I know it's a little bit of a tough sell right now, but you know, there's a way to do this business-wise if you have a streaming option for people that I think is going to be extremely popular given Pittsburghers, wherever you are, your passion for sports.
Well, I'm going to have to sit down and look at the numbers if and when this comes to pass, Jason. But even in market, I think it could be pretty attractive if you don't want to pay for 800 other channels on your cable package and you just want to watch the Pirates, Penguins. Maybe you get your ESPNs, your FS1s thrown in there, your network television. I think a lot of people would be satisfied with that. I think this gives you a pathway to that, even if you're a local fan. And so I'd be curious to see what those numbers are, on the local side. And maybe the Pirates and Penguins get a little bit more out of the local sports fan than they were before to replace those sports fans that were paying for AT&T Sportsnet before that no longer are through the cable bundle because they don't care as much about sports. So the streaming thing is the number one thing I'm most curious about to see that, you know, play out in the next months and years after this deal. I wanted to ask you this directly because I know you talked to Travis Williams about it. The impact that the lack of a deal until today had on their ability to spend and do business in free agency. I know a lot of fans are upset that they haven't made more moves, haven't seen more going on. Yeah. So tell me what Travis Williams said about that and the impact that that's had on this offseason so far.
So Travis said it has not. Said absolutely not. It's not going to impact the way they've done business. I heard feedback on both ends. I felt from the reporter's standpoint that was an important question to ask, and that was my impetus, and then everybody else can feel how they want. But you know, I heard the smart aleck responses from, if you don't have any expectations, you can't not meet them, or if you never actually do anything, of course you can never actually not do anything. You get the idea. I really don't think that it has had a lot of impact, Adam. I don't. And I think the Pirates set out, and I need to be careful with this because people seem to take this as me like endorsing the idea. But you know you need a lot of pitching. You know that the number of dollars you're going to spend, if you're Ben Charrington, if you're Travis Williams, like you're going to be allowed to spend are not as much as anybody would like, right? And so you have to be targeted with those additions. So the Pirates sort of nudge themselves into a deal with Marco Gonzalez. And I don't have any issue with that being a number 4 or 5 starter for $3 million. You're going to create a platoon with Rowdy Tellez and Connor Joe and save, you know, a little bit of money and hopefully redirect that into pitching. I think where the Pirates are going to see this sort of stuff happen is via trade. We knew that. Where they trade, I don't know. Who they trade, I don't know. They're aware they need to fix pitching. So I guess that's a long way of saying that this is going to take time. And I think that it's okay if they're not just plunking $13 million down on Luis Severino. I don't necessarily love that. I would much rather see them bundle a Nick Gonzalez and something else to try to make that happen. I think they might get a better pitcher for more years of club control. But in any case, I don't think they're not spending money because of the TV deal. I think they're trying to execute a plan that's taking a little bit longer because of the nature of players involved, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly see that. And I think, you know, when you're talking about I don't know what. What's the difference here? 10, 12 million, we think, maybe, if we're pulling an estimate. You know, I wonder how, you know, in the grand scheme of all the operating income, all the national television money, all of the gate revenue, you know, what percentage is this loss in potential loss in TV revenue, you know, at the end of the day? And granted, yeah. $10 million sounds like a lot of money, but I think in the context of owning a baseball team, it is kind of like Travis Williams was saying, it's somewhat incidental. I understand why fans wouldn't feel that way. You know, certainly when they've only spent $6 million so far. But I'm willing to wait and see. And before,
yeah, you know, if you want to crush them in February because they haven't spent money, by all means. I just, like, that's been my soapbox. Like, it's December 13th, man. Like, let's give it a little bit more time. Just give it time. There are other teams that haven't spent too.
Yeah, and trades happen, you know, what, the Josh Bell trade happened on Christmas. I'm sure you remember that better than anyone else.
Yeah, I seem to recall that one.
Yeah, so at least through the end of the year, I think, before I start firing up the takes to too high a degree. In terms of this television deal, one thing I wanted to ask about, too, that I know you asked Travis Williams, was the conflict of interest concerns of NESN is operating this network, the Northeast Sports Network. It is owned by the Fenway Sports Group, which owns the Red Sox, also owns the Penguins. So there was, you know, some concern that if this is the arrangement, you know, early on, is it almost like, you know, the Pirates are asking the Red Sox for money, that they're, you know, hitting up the big club and saying, hey, you know, what can we spend? What are we allowed to do? I noticed the wording in your story was very specific, Jason. You said this is a joint venture owned by the Penguins and Pirates.
Yep.
The Pirates have ownership and it is managed by NESN. Talk me through the nuts and bolts of that. Yep.
So they're very particular about that. I understand that. NESN's managing it. I asked Travis, you know, sort of like, what did MLB say? And how do you guys, I asked him basically the same question, Adam. And I said, if I look at this, I would look at it and think about, this is a weird arrangement and maybe a conflict of interest. How is this not a conflict of interest? He talked up the relationships with all involved, which is fine. He said MLB didn't raise a stink. And I thought the interesting part of his answer about MLB was saying that MLB looked at FSG and NESN as a hockey group. They didn't look at them as a baseball group, which, okay. I mean, you're partnering the Penguins. Okay. You like the FSG owned Penguins is partnering with the baseball team, the Pirates. Got it. But I mean, that's like ignoring who owns the Penguins, you know, the same conglomerate owns the Penguins as owns Liverpool and drag racing and whatever. So, I mean, like, I don't understand that. Then it took me to another level where I said, what if you wanted to do something sneaky? If you were FSG, what would you be doing? What sort of crime would you be committing? Even if it was a bit of a quote-unquote conflict of interest, would you be wanting to promote the Pirates on your network? Like, is that bad? Is that bad for, you know, you wouldn't be directly handing Bob Nutting money. I wouldn't think so. Although in a larger scale, John Henry does hand Bob Nutting money, you know, through revenue sharing. You know, are they going to work together to make this station work potentially? But is that good business or cheating? I don't know if I see that as, you know, maybe you could complain on the Red Sox side that it's some sort of conflict of interest. Like if John Henry's promoting this stuff, it's helping pull along another club. I feel like that's also calling unnecessary roughness on the quarterback. Like the Pirates are cheating by getting too much money. Really? Like as I did more mental gymnastics on this, Adam, unless there's something I'm not seeing, I just don't necessarily see what sort of crimes the Pirates can be committing by doing this, other than maybe being, you know, helped along a little bit by the Red Sox, even if it's as simple as national ad accounts or popularity or having, you know, clearly smart people running NESN if they're also running Sportsnet Pittsburgh. And I don't think that's something that is wrong or illegal.
Yeah, I wouldn't certainly say illegal. I think if I was going to articulate the concern, it would be, well, you're getting a worse television deal than you had before, and that's sure. that's not FSG
for now. Stuff. For now,
right. But you're making less money, and you're getting into business with, you know, another MLB team. How can you not, you know, somewhat connect those dots and say the Red Sox are lowballing the Pirates to some extent? I would say who else was involved in offering, you know, a deal that was, you know, attractive and attractive to the fan base as well. Because again, if the Pirates end up with MLB's TV deal, you know, what, how does that affect distribution? How does that affect their connection to the community? I think about all that programming inside Pirates baseball through all those years. How many rain delays do we sit through? And you watch the current ones, but you also watch years old documentaries, interviews with guys who've been dead for years that are, I think, are treasures to a lot of Pirates fans to kind of, you know, keep the history alive and
that would
keep
all go away. Going. That would all go away.
Right, right. And so I think there's some value there, even if you're making less money in terms of keeping that connection with the fans. It is complicated. Television is complicated these days. And I think, you know, in the absence of true streaming platforms stepping up, there were only so many customers, you know, for the Pirates services anyway, right?
Yeah. I mean, but their ratings are very good. I think sixth highest in MLB, something like that. I mean, it's not like they're struggling. You know, if you would look at maybe their ratings compared to what they got, I mean, maybe it's not great. I don't know the exact number of what they got again. But even if you look at it from a low end, like I kind of look at this from a strategic and a business standpoint in a couple different ways. I mean, one, it's a short-term deal. So if it doesn't work out and the MLB thing suddenly takes off and that's a more viable option in 3 years, they've left that door open. At the same time, I think I'm going to wait and see, like, that sort of idea going at this with Nesson. What if this really works? I mean, what if there's ways to tap into national advertisers that the Pirates previously didn't have, or ways to bring in dollars that they didn't have because of what Nesson has established? I mean, that might be really good. And I mean, that takes care of Nesson. They're looking to start Sportsnet Pittsburgh for a Pirates standpoint. And the component that they need to make it work is a bunch of programming to basically give staff a year-round job and, you know, again, attract different advertisers. So, I mean, you are kind of scratching each other's backs. And so if you go at it saying like it's a short-term deal, these are the dollars, but the potential to grow into more, or the potential maybe it doesn't work and we go somewhere else. Like, I don't know. I kind of get that from a strategic standpoint. And I also get resisting the MLB model right now. I don't think that's the smartest move for the Pirates because of what you mentioned. No pre and post, no inside Pirates baseball. Like, as nostalgic as some of that stuff is, I understand the Pirates argument where they're like, hey man, like, we need to get messages out about our prospects. We need to get messages out about what we're doing. We need to do like the big sit down with Radley Haddad or something, you know, stories that like they're not going to expect external media to write, but they want to do themselves. Like, I understand that.
Yeah. And Jason, I think you led in well to my last question on this topic before we move on to Endy, which was, how do you feel that the Pirates are lined up compared to the rest of the sport? Because like, they're losing money, yes, but so are most of the rest of these teams on the deals, you know, with Diamond Sportsnet, which owned the Bally stations, the teams that were on AT&T. It seems like the teams in the sport that are doing the best financially have a similar arrangement, right? It's the Red Sox with Nesson. It's the Yankees with Yes Network. It's the Mets with SNY. This seems like the Pirates are moving closer to that model here with what they're doing than you know, some of these other clubs that just, it kind of feels like they're being left to twist in the wind.
Yeah. No, I think it was important for the Pirates to do that. And I like to answer the initial question, I think they're in a pretty good spot with it. I think the dollars up front initially right now might be less, but I think big picture, they're in a better spot. I don't think whatever lag and, you know, dollars in the initial start of the TV deal, which again might not be much, but whatever, it really doesn't matter. Like, I like what they're doing here. I like the possibility of it. I think this is going to be an important thing for a lot of teams. And the fact that there's the natural tie-in with FSG and the Penguins, and there's a good relationship there, again, done right, I think this could make a lot of sense for the Pirates. I would much rather see them doing this than if they go the MLB route right now before it's ready, which I think is where we're at. Now, if the MLB sort of fixes it, changes it, seemingly they're more ready, I think that's the right way to say it, more prepared to pull teams under their umbrella, I think that makes sense. But for right now, I think the Pirates did the best available thing. They got the most money they could, and now I'm interested to see where this goes.
Yeah, I'm interested to see as well, especially that streaming option that we talked a lot about. Yep. Jason, let's get into the Endy Rodriguez injury. I think the first question a lot of people had was, why was he in a winter ball to get injured in the first place? He's the starting catcher. You know, obviously he didn't play, I think, to the level a lot of people hoped for when they were clamoring for him to be called up. But, you know, I think he was an acceptable option for a lot of people at catcher, and now you don't have him for an entire season. Talk me through what their logic was having him in that situation at all.
Yeah, and let me just start off, Adam, by saying I agree with it. I don't think he should have been in winter ball. I understand it. I just don't like it. I don't see any need for him to play winter ball. But if I'm going to explain the thought process and why we got to this point, it's this. This is a tough dynamic with some younger Latin players where they want to play. They want to play winter ball. Guys want to represent their country. They want to make a little extra money. And you kind of have to – it's delicate. You don't want to sour a relationship with a player. You want to respect their desire to get better and play for their country. In Endy's case, like, he didn't have a very good year. I mean, he did some things well, but I would argue offensively, he was not very good. Defensively, he has room to grow. And so you combine, like, hey, I want to play for my home country. I want to work on X, Y, and Z. You kind of just green light it and hope nothing happens. Well, something did. And I think with Endy's case, why I specifically don't like this, if you remember back to April, he was dealing with some elbow stuff. He was shut down for a couple weeks. And, you know, looking back now, that was probably something. Now, he got through the rest of the season. He threw extremely well. Velocity on his throws down to the second were good. Pop time was good. Like, it didn't really show itself in performance on the field. But was this a risk the Pirates needed to take? No. Like, I think this is a lesson learned where, you know, you kind of draw a line in the sand and say, we're the adults in the room. We employ you. You're not playing. And I think the next time they have a scenario like this, that's what it should be. It just stinks that right now it takes a promising young player and a really important part of that player out of the clubhouse.
Yeah, and it muddles the catching situation. Yeah. I think you and I, the last we talked, we were like, what exactly is going on with the catching situation? I think now we have now learned the reason that the Pirates were making some of these moves at catchers because they knew something was wrong and we didn't necessarily know that. I think it explains a lot of the out of nowhere, I feel confidence that they are now expressing in Henry Davis to be part of that catching situation. What's your read on what they really think here? Because to me, they're trying to have things both ways. You talk about Austin Hedges for 4 months as, you know, God's gift to baseball because of the way he plays defense. It doesn't matter if he hits at all. Well, he plays great defense, and we really value that so much more than having Henry Davis here, and he's got a lot to work on. Now all of a sudden he's ready, you know, to carry the load with Endy out of the picture. You know, talk me through where they go from here at that position.
Yeah. I mean, and not to defend the Pirates moves, but I'll try to present the other thing. I mean, it's never one thing. You know, you invested money in Austin Hedges and you're going to try to juice every bit out of him you can, and then maybe turn him into something. And they waited too long. I mean, we talked about that last year, and, you know, now given their available options, like, this is what they have. You know, ideally they'd prefer that Endy Rodriguez's elbow was functional and they could maybe rotate him and Henry, or shoot, maybe Henry plays the outfield. I don't even know. It's also possible for Henry to improve. Just because he stunk behind the plate last year doesn't mean he can't be better this year. And so given their available options, we also don't know that they're not looking for some help. Like, I believe Jacob Stallings is still out there, which is an interesting one to me. I don't know how far that gets you, but it probably gets you a little bit of certainty anyway. They also, like, Jason DeLay has been fine. If you have Jason DeLay and Henry Davis splitting reps, I mean, okay. I don't love it, but I don't hate it. DeLay was okay defensively. He makes peanuts. I mean, you're not allocating Austin Hedges money to him. But I think Henry Davis also just deserves a chance to do this. That's one issue that I've had with the Pirates and, you know, their handling of him. Just put him behind the plate. If he's terrible, then at least you know. You gave him a chance to do it. You're not, like, screwing around with him in right field, him DHing. You're saying he's not ready, always going to work on catching before the game. Like, man, I don't know. If I would have you draft the kid 1-1 in 2021, you see other kids from that draft coming up. You've tried your best. You've done the best you possibly can to develop him. If you feel like there's nothing left to be gained in AAA, you bring him up and you rip the Band-Aid off and you let him go. And if it stinks, then you've got to ask some questions about your development. But so anyway, I think that accomplishes that, Adam. I mean, you know, you're going to throw him into the deep end and see what happens. Maybe you get a bit part, a little bit more depth along with Ali Sanchez, but it's an interesting situation for sure.
Yeah, I think my concern would be that it just does not feel like they have a plan with this guy, and is this the best thing? Is it the best thing for his development to say, well, now we have this problem and we're going to make you the solution? And, you know, they had all these concerns before, and you're right. I mean, there's still time for them to do things. And so, again, this is probably, let's talk about this a little bit more when we get into Bradenton and all that. But as we sit here today, it just feels like you're just putting him where it's most convenient. And I don't think that's what you should be doing with a 1-1 type of guy.
Fair, completely fair point, man. Completely fair point. But devil's advocate, isn't the best option for him to catch? Like the best.
I'm fine with where he's going out. I just don't like how we got here, I guess.
I agree with you. I agree with you. And I think maybe they signed Sanchez. Like, you give Davis a chance to earn the job in spring, right? Like, if he's hideous, then you've got to go another route. Maybe you go delay in Sanchez. Maybe you pick somebody else up, put Henry in AAA. I don't know. But I think ideally you want Henry to spend an offseason improving his catching enough that it's viable to be in a major league game. I don't know if it will be or won't be. But, you know, like you said, the path to get here was awful circuitous, but we're here now. And so he needs to catch, and he's going to have the opportunity to catch if he can hit, if he can catch and hit too, I should say.
Yeah. So that'll be a situation worth monitoring. Jason, I want to ask you this question. I came up, I was recording the show that is going to come out tomorrow with Paul Zeiss. He actually asked me the question, so I'm going to pose it to you. Are the Pirates a better or worse team today than they were when the season ended with the loss of Johan Oviedo and Andy Rodriguez? I don't know. I'm curious to hear your opinion.
I would say worse. That's a good question. I feel like if you say better, you look crazy or somebody's going to scream at you. But they didn't lose that much. They lost what from their opening day roster? Talk me through this. They lost Kutch. They lost Velasquez, or from their final day of the season roster. Those guys weren't impacting anything. They get O'Neill Cruz back, theoretically. Are you telling me I get the season-ending versions of Brian Reynolds, Jack Sawinski, and Ke'Bryan Hayes, but I don't have Andy Rodriguez? Can I say the same? That's probably a cop-out.
I think that's a fair C option to add to the question.
I will say that they are worse, not by much, on account of losing their starting catcher, losing somebody I thought was really growing in nicely to a number two in Johan Oviedo, and having some uncertainty with what Marco Gonzalez is going to bring and what other pitchers we're going to develop into. But I don't think it's all that different. What about you?
I think they're a little bit worse as well. And this is the frustrating part, is you've had a month of the offseason. We probably shouldn't be having that conversation of, are they better or worse? You know, there should be some things to get people a little bit more, you know, excited. And like you said, sometimes these things take time, but I certainly understand the apprehension, you know, as it's bleeding out now. I think it's a difficult question, but it had to be asked, and I'm glad Paul asked it. So check out his answer on the Thursday video. That's a little tease for you in the business.
I bet Paul thought they were better, right? You don't have to tell me.
He thought they were way worse.
No kidding.
Yeah. Okay. So
here's the thing, and I should say it in Paul's eyes voice, but I can't. Maybe I need to have more of a sense of urgency, but I just – the Pirates are not people's number one destination. In case anybody watching this like actually thought they were, put yourself in a player's shoes right now. If you're a player worth a darn, why are you going to jump at the chance to sign at the Pirates in December when you're going to theoretically hope you have other options? Now, it gets later in the offseason. You want to make sure you have a job. You want to make sure you're a starter. You want to make sure you're an important part of a team. And at that point, you're gonna sign something, and it's going to move you. But right now, as we sit here on December 13th, Adam, like, that's not motivating. Now, if the Pirates break through, if they win 86 games, if they're a lot of fun and people see those seeds starting to grow, that's going to change perception, you know, but that's not there yet right now. And the goal is to change that and want Pittsburgh to be more of a desired destination the way it was in 13, 14, 15. But it's just not that right now.
Yeah, I get that, but I think there's also a level where, you know, to get to 13, 14, 15, you had 11 and 12, and I don't know that I'm getting 11 and 12 vibes, especially 12 with, you know, when A.J. Burnett gets here and you know, I think was a big culture change, and obviously the production was a huge component of it, but sometimes you got to do things to change that mindset too, right? And
they went out and traded for Russ, and they haven't done something similar with the, or did they? No, they signed Russ. They didn't trade for Russ. They traded for Burnett and signed Russell Martin. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think in the absence of some of those moves, like, you know, you got to get the snowball's going to get rolling somewhere. And right. I haven't seen them make that move that makes people say, okay, well, we're going to maybe take them a little bit more seriously. Right. And I guess that's the criticism that I'd level. Jason, I want to get you out of here on this. Rowdy Tellez, we could have probably done a whole episode on the first base situation, but given everything that's happened, it's kind of the footnote here at the end of the show. What do you think of that signing, $3 million? I've seen a lot of angry people about, you know, the appearance that this is how they're going to address first base, a platoon with Connor Joe and Rowdy Tellez. What's your read on that move and the potential of it?
All right, comedic stuff first. I'm so excited. There's one player in Major League Baseball nicknamed Rowdy, and I take a great amount of pleasure in calling Andrew Destin Rowdy, as people who follow us on Twitter know, because he's the most organized, polite, kind, you know, just wonderful, wonderful kid. I love Andrew. But so calling him Rowdy and saying he's like out of control and an attitude problem is fun for me. So now that we have a Pirates player named Rowdy, it's even more fun. What they're doing at first base, this is an unpopular take, as I've been told on Twitter, and that's fine, and I don't really care. I don't hate it. I don't really have any problem with it. I mean, this is a true platoon. You're taking Rowdy Tellez and banking that he's going to be more what he was in 2022 when he had 35 home runs. If nothing else, the dude's hit right-handed pitching pretty well throughout his career, and that's what they need him to do. They don't need him to do, you know, to field or to run all that well. Like, there's other guys to do that. You need left-handed power, and you can split him with Connor Joe, which, like, Connor Joe does some other stuff okay, but we know he can hit left-handed pitching. So I want Connor Joe to hit left-handed pitching and play first base. I want Rowdy Tellez to hit right-handed pitching and play first base. Together, they're going to cost you, what, $5 million? And they could produce, theoretically, a combined OPS like between 780 and 800. That's commensurate production for what they're spending. There's a few leaps that we're taking. Like, you're expecting Tellez to be a little bit more like 2022. What if he is? What if he somehow discovers that? Then all of a sudden you've blown away $5 million for that level of production. Like, people weren't this hacked off about Yoshi, about G-Man Choi. And the salary was about the same. I mean, he's going to be making a little bit more than Choi, and the production's theoretically going to be a heck of a lot better. So I don't have a problem with it. If you want to, you know, rip me, but I don't see anything to get that upset about.
Do you think they're done here, Jason? A and B, if they're not, I mean, I know you were a big fan of Carlos Santana. We've had a couple conversations about that. They don't go that direction. What's your, you know, takeaway from that, is as someone who that seemed to be the move you preferred, and now this is you're done?
Well, I don't think they want to spend that money on Carlos Santana. And do I agree with it? No. Would I rather have Carlos Santana? Yes. But do I understand what they're doing here? Yes. And I think it's all incumbent on another piece of the offseason. If you're going to save this money on first base, and they're saving a decent chunk of change, like Santana's projection, I think, was $7.5 million. And right now, at this point in the offseason, he's probably holding out trying to get $7.5-$8 million. That's great. But, you know, I'm going to slice four off of that to get Rowdy Tellez and then platoon. If that gets me another pitcher, I'm taking the pitcher. I mean, right now they have two starting pitchers in their rotation. And $4 million that was enough to afford, I believe, Jose Quintana and Tyler Anderson. You just had to wait a little bit for those deals to come together. I would like that. I would like them to get more pitching. So if you tell me, like, we think we're going to be able to get pitching if we just wait it out, and we're going to be able to get pitching for cheap and fix these guys the way we fixed other people, but we have to live with Rowdy Tellez at first base, I can't really disagree with it. Again, like, the greater need is pitching. And also, like, sorry to keep blabbing on this, but I mean, I want to leave a little bit of runway for, like, guys like Jared Triola. What if Jared Triola works out? You got to play him somewhere. I want to see him get at bats. So I don't hate it for those reasons.
Can we include Henry Davis in that possible runway conversation?
No, I don't think so. I think that's just probably a better chance of Jack Sawinski playing first base than Henry. And I don't think there's a very good chance of either one of them playing first base, to be perfectly honest with you. I saw Endy as somebody who could go over there, and that was with when he was healthy and you had four catchers and trying to figure out what the heck you're doing. It makes a little bit more sense now. Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting question, Adam. I mean, maybe you want to start, you know, working with somebody to get over there. I don't think we've heard, I know this is kind of an off the board one, I don't think we've heard the last of Malcolm Nunez. I've watched a lot of him, his body type, what he can do. There's a lot of power there. I know it's a right-handed bat, but like, and he was really banged up all of last year. He's one of the guys that got in the Oviedo trade. I'm just curious to see what he pans out. I mean, maybe it's nothing. Maybe it ends up being Mason Martin. I don't know, but yeah, Henry Davis's arm is too good for me. I don't want to put it over there. Same reason I don't like Cruz going over there. You're just wasting what those guys do so well.
Yeah, I can certainly see that argument. But at a certain point, if the bat plays, you know, is that going to govern things? You know, that would be my question. Is if you can't find a place for that bat, and if he can't catch, if he can't play the outfield, and you have to find a place for that bat, it feels like the only solution left on the board for me, other than saying you're just a DH.
I agree with you, and I would not want to have my 1-1 pick turn into a DH. I don't think that's a great outcome. I'm just saying I'm not there yet. Like, I would rather – I mean, honestly, Adam, I kind of circle back to I almost wish they would have just made him an outfielder and just say, screw it. Like, you can't catch. You're going to play the outfield. But if we look at two positions where he might be equally defensively deficient, right now for this year, the need is catcher. So, okay, go do it. And then if you can't do it after a whole offseason, a bunch of playing time to work on stuff, if you can't do it then, well, at least we know you're not a catcher. And then they can move on. So I understand that aspect of it. And they are insulated a little bit with Jason DeLay. And I don't love the Sanchez thing. But, you know, maybe you can improve upon that with something. I've always been a guy, like, I don't – if you can get premium offense from behind the plate, that's fantastic. Last I checked, the Pirates weren't going to be paying for you know, premium offense behind the plate, whatever name you want to throw out there. But yeah, I just get somebody reasonable, and Henry might be able to do that. I think he at least deserves a chance.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a good place to leave it, Jason. Any final thoughts?
No, that's it. I appreciate us doing this though. A lot to talk about. It was semi-depressing. It's fun.
I know it was a long emergency podcast. A lot of things, but you know, some clarity. I think is what a lot of Pirate fans have been looking for on the television deal. So you know, seeing how that plays out and what that product looks like, I think is going to be, you know, an exciting change going into next season. So Jason, thanks for stopping by. Thanks for talking to me, everyone. I already teased I'll be on with Jason or Paul Zeiss Thursday here on the Sports Now YouTube channel. We talked a little bit of Jaden Daniels, Justin Fields. Could they be in the mix for the Steelers? Christopher Carter will be back on the North Shore Drive Friday. He'll have plenty of Steelers Colts conversations. So make sure you subscribe. Make sure you like this video if you enjoyed it. Help us out in the YouTube algorithm. Help us reach more Pirates fans who might be looking for this type of content. And until next time, we will talk to you. You're going to be back on Pitching In, right, Jason, before I sign off?
I think so. We're going to try. This week's been haywire. So yes, we're in the process of trying to schedule that out. What I was trying to get done this week has been thrown for a loop because of three breaking news items in about 12 hours, but we're going to try. So
cool. Well, stay tuned for that, and we will talk to you again next time.
Thank you for checking out this content from Post Gazette Sports. If you watch this video on YouTube, please like the video and subscribe to our channel. For all of the sports coverage the Post Gazette has to offer, visit post-gazette.com.